Find her expert advice anytime at thinkblink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the Elite Blink Show, where we are rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. Our number, 404-872-0750. Phone lines are wide open. Lots of room in our day to take your call and help you out. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time. ThinkGlink.com. ThinkGlink.com. You'll have to excuse me. There's a whole bunch of stuff in the air today, and I find that my throat is just, no matter how much coffee I drank, there's just not really clearing, so there's going to be a little, like, lower pitch, I think, to today's show. If you are investing in real estate, you will want to take advantage of the Intentional Investor Series, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate. It is a 2.5-hour series that I've created online on thinklink.com, and it's 9 webinars. It's going to be paired with 9 ebooks at the end of this week. So take a look. This is going to be very, very exciting. And, personally, there's been a whole bunch of people who have done this because it's just great information. If you want to get started in investing in real estate, this is the place to go. So go to thinklink.com and click on the red house. All right, let's start where the money is, shall we? And the money is now at mortgage interest rates. So there was just an absolute panic in the market this week when Ben Bernanke, who's head of the Federal Reserve, actually said that he might throttle back. He didn't even use such a harsh word. He might throttle back, though, on $85 billion a month buying of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. He might actually stop pumping that money into the economy and forcibly hold, basically, that's what he's doing, forcibly holding down mortgage interest rates and other interest rates. And everybody shivered. Now, it isn't as though you didn't know this was coming. It isn't as though you didn't think that it was not a great idea for the Fed to be pumping trillions of dollars in and holding all this money off on their balance sheet. It isn't as if you didn't know that it was just sort of mathematically impossible to keep doing this. And yet, the market shivered and lost hundreds of points and everybody got very, very nervous. And changes can be very hard. And for every loser, there's also a winner. So let's think about what happened now that mortgage interest rates on a 30-year fixed-rate loan hit 4.25% on Thursday. It is up almost a full percentage point from where it was in May. Now we're in June. Let's see. That's 1 month. I'll call it 6 weeks. So in 6 weeks, we have seen mortgage interest rates jump up between 0.75% to 1%. And I did NPR's Marketplace yesterday, and they asked me what I thought about that. And I said to them, what I think is that these are still the lowest interest rates in history. And as late as May of 2012, when mortgage, maybe it was even a little sooner, maybe it was March. I have to go back and look at the numbers. But even in March of 2012, so about a year and a quarter ago, we were heralding 4.25% as being remarkable and historic low interest rates. I just want to give you a little bit of perspective, because if you could see my mail, and you feel free to send me an email, questions@thinklink.com, and I will try to get to it, although I travel a lot. People are having a panic attack over the fact that mortgage interest rates have bounced up. And it's true, that mortgage interest rates going up means that homes will be a little less affordable. That's absolutely true. But housing prices are still down a huge amount. You know, when you look at what makes up the real estate industry, real estate and its tendrils, and by that I mean the paint companies and contractors who do fix-ups and, you know, build new houses and Home Depot and all the different tendrils of real estate, make up about 9% of our economy. It used to be 11%. There's still a depression in new construction. Yes, it's up 20% from last year. It's still down 60% from where it was 6-7 years ago. When you look at the total number of sales, existing home sales, yes, it's up from last year a lot. It's still down 20-30% from where it was 6 or 7 years ago. If you look at the number of people doing mortgages, the number of people doing real estate sales, down dramatically. And so all of this has a dramatic effect on the economy. It just does. And mortgage interest rates are going to have an impact on that. You know, it's one thing for me to say that if it goes up a half a percent, just buy a cheaper house. Okay, we'll go another percent and you can still buy a cheaper house. But there is going to be a point in time where that formula won't work anymore. Not yet. In fact, you know, what I hear from economists is mortgage interest rates could go up to 5.5%, 6%, and over your lifetime it's still cheaper to own a house than rent a house. Okay? Some of that depends on where you live. But the point is that owning is still an amazing thing. This is still a great time to buy. And yet, we still don't have the employment, the full employment, to support everybody having a shot at home ownership. Now, you could say maybe everybody shouldn't have a shot at home ownership, but I like home ownership. You know, the 20-odd years that I've been watching this industry, writing about this industry, participating as an investor and a homeowner in this industry, I think home ownership is pretty cool. I live across what is now, and I'm staring at it right now because I broadcast on Sundays sometimes from my home office, and I'm staring across a construction site right now at my neighbor's house. They've been neighbors of ours for almost the entire time we've lived in this house, and what's really interesting about it is that they bought this land that's in between us, and they're now going to expand their house, which is really great for me. And I'm thrilled, and I really like these people. But this week, and it's kind of a metaphor for this whole rebuilding, right? This week, they started the construction, and they knocked down the house that was there that was like a 100-year-old house, and it could not be saved. I'm a big proponent of saving old houses. I saved an old house, but you just can't. There was nothing to save in this house. So the house came down, and then a bunch of us in this neighborhood lost trees to the ash borer disease. I mean, I lost 9 trees over the winter. It was horrible. But there was a beautiful tree that is about 120 years old in between our yards. And the tree had to come down because it's in the way of their rebuilding. And it's so interesting, folks, when a tree comes down, a tree that has grown for 100 years and provided shade. I'm sure you're thinking of Shel Silverstein's The Giving Tree, which has been in my mind all week, of course. But this tree, when it came down, allowed for so many new possibilities. It's really interesting. In the 20 years I've lived in my house, almost 20, this tree has always been there, and it's been a big canopy. And when it got taken down, it allowed me to see my house and the land and the opportunities in an entirely new light. It was a dramatic change. I can now see my neighbor's house, and I never saw this side of their house before. It's the side that faces my house. I never saw it because the tree was in the way. The tree did wonderful things. It provided shade, and it helped keep the cooling costs down. But when I went outside this morning and I looked at how the sunlight was hitting this house, my house, in a way that I've never seen in 20 years, it made me think about new beginnings and new opportunities for everybody. You know, clearly for our neighbors, this is a new opportunity for them to build and add on to their house. For us, it puts us in closer concepts, right? I went out to get the paper this morning, and my neighbor said, "Hi, neighbor," because now we can see each other in a way that we weren't able to for nearly 20 years. When profound things change in your life, it's sad. It's hard. You know, I miss the tree. And yet, it gives a new lens, a new view, a new opportunity to rebuild or build. An opportunity to take a step forward. And you know I am so big on taking steps forward. 404-872-0750 on the Elise Kling Show, where we are rebuilding America one step at a time. Lines are wide open. If you've always wanted to call and you didn't call because you could never get through, today's your lucky day. 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Kling. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more in a moment on News Talk WSB. 24 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Kling. We are rebuilding America one house at a time. Starting with yours, thanks for joining me, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Follow me online at Glink on Twitter. All right, David joins us on the line. Hey, David.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. What's going on?
Well, I just wanted to call you from the perspective of a real estate agent and a builder.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about home ownership and just how great it is, but some people are just not financially cut out to be a homeowner. Through the years, I would see people come to closings, and they would have a little checklist. They've had to complete a financial planning class, different things, and, you know, and we would close, and then maybe a year and a half later, I would see the house back on the market. And most of the time, not most of the time, but a high percentage of the time, it was because of financial issues and not able to care for the mortgage in the house.
So, David, were you a builder, a real estate agent? Is that what you said?
Both.
So,
I have rental property, too, and I would have people that moved out. I had one lady live with me for 7 years. She bought a little small house and moved out. And, you know, I just told her 4 or 5 months later, and she said she wished she had never moved. She just couldn't handle being a homeowner.
Okay, and your point is that some people aren't cut out for it, but I don't think that it should be denied to people simply because other people think they are not cut out for it. I think that our job and my job is to really encourage everybody who wants to have a piece of that homeownership society to learn and grow and develop and change enough to be able to live there successfully. Because I got to tell you, David, I disagree with the basic contention that not everybody's cut out for it. I think not everybody's cut out for it today, but if this is a goal of yours and you're willing to put forth the effort and learn about how to manage these kinds of more complex financial dealings in your life, there are ways to do it. You can listen to this show. You can go to my website. There's so many websites out there. You can educate yourself. This show is about educating yourself to the place where you get to achieve your dreams. And I really want that for every single listener. So, yes, I agree with you that not everybody's cut out for it, but I think that everybody could be cut out for it. I think that we all make mistakes, and we shouldn't be X'd out of something that we dream about simply because today we're not in a place to make that a reality. This show is about rebuilding. It's about making these kinds of things a reality. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Kling. Stay tuned. I'll be right back with more in a moment on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkblink.com and find Elise Kling live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
35 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. All right, we are going to go to Chad. Chad joins me on the line from Ackworth. Hi, Chad.
How you doing, Elise?
I'm great. What's going on with you?
Oh, not much. We have three sons, and we're saving for college, and we've been investing in the Georgia 529 plan, and it's been pretty simple and easy, but we've been hearing some talk about the Coverdell ESAs and just trying to find out if we're missing out on something. Is there somewhere we can go to get some information to make sure that we're doing everything we can to save for college?
Well, how old are your boys?
They are 5, 3, and 1.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you have time to call me. No, really. My boys were 3 and 5 or 3 and 1. I didn't have time to call anybody. So good for you.
Yeah, I know. I know what you're talking about.
They just kept me running and running and running. And now they keep me running in an entirely different direction, that they are almost 18 and 15. So,
I'm sure.
And it's interesting because my older one is going to be a senior in high school, and so he's beginning the process of applying to college. And every day I say to him, did you start your essays yet? Did you start your essays yet? And I'm becoming, in front of my very own eyes, one of those helicopter parents that you read about.
Oh.
And sneer at. That's me. I'm turning into one.
I'm going to try not to.
Yeah, you got a few more years. My kids were 3 and 5, I didn't think I was going to be one either. So you got a few years to hold on to it. So good luck with that.
Okay.
So Coverdell ESAs are sort of interesting. So we used to talk about these when I would fill in for Clark as the Education IRA, because that's what it used to be. The Education IRA, and it was started in like 1998, and even right at the very beginning, the 529 plans kind of far surpassed them. They were more flexible, they had potentially lower costs, there was the tax-free treatment with a 529, that at the time with the Education IRA didn't work. But now, the Coverdell ESAs have kind of flipped around, and they've become, I think, very, very helpful in a lot of ways. So, and this all changed like in 2012.
Okay.
So last year is when sort of the Coverdell ESA kind of came into its own. So some of the benefits are lower costs, and you get some tax-free treatment, not just for college expenses, but for education, for elementary and secondary school, K-12, as they call it.
Okay.
And there are some other benefits as well for people who have income things. So first of all, the thing with that's different between a 529 and a Coverdell is an income requirement. So the income phase-out for a Coverdell is $95,000 to $110,000 for a single taxpayer and $190,000 to $220,000 for a married couple filing jointly.
Okay.
So if you fall in that window up to those levels, you can contribute $2,000 a year to a Coverdell ESA for a child. Okay? So that's good. But there are some limitations. So the assets are not revocable. That means that you establish this account for the sole benefit of a child, right? The bank or financial institution you use is the custodian for the Coverdell ESA. You get to call the shots in the investments and distributions, but the distributions are always paid to the beneficiary and don't come back to you. You only have until the child reaches age 30 to distribute all of those funds, and if you don't, then there's a possible penalty and tax that would be assessed to it.
Okay. For a specific child?
Yes, you could do it for $2,000 for each child.
Okay.
And then a grandparent, they could open up a separate one. So I kind of think for grandparents and other relatives that want to contribute, the 529 is going to be better. I think it's kind of a toss-up for you on whether the Coverdell ESA or the 529 is going to be better.
Okay.
So I'm not sure that it's going to make a huge benefit. And one of the problems is that the Coverdell ESAs are not widely offered. So
I've heard that somewhere.
And that the plans tend to have more limited investment options.
Okay.
So what would you do that might be better? Well, you've got 3 kids, so that's potentially $6,000 that you could put away. You've got, if you're eligible, and the limitations are kind of similar for a Roth IRA. Roth IRAs are good, but that limits you to $5,000 for all, that's just for you, and then your spouse can also open one up. So that's potentially $10,000, but that's a retirement account, and that actually has some additional benefits. If you can do all of it, I would do all of it, right? Always do the Roth IRA for yourself and for your spouse, and then beyond that, do the college. I like the 529. We've been doing that for years, but
okay.
So then you
could
Coverdale.
Do a 529 and a Coverdale. You could do both of those in the same year.
So, I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I think that you can only do one or the other.
I got you.
But I will check it during the next break, and I will try to find the answer. And if I do, I'll definitely share that with you.
Okay.
Now, there's a really good website that you can go to, and I want to give this to you. And for everybody who's looking into the whole saving for college, Joe Hurley, who I've interviewed for years, runs a website called savingforcollege.com. He is a CPA. And he started this website when, I don't even know how many years ago, but he's got a great book out called Family Guide to College Savings, and you can download it for free. He's got he talks about all the different 529 plans, but it's a great place to go to get easy-to-understand information about all of these different kinds of things.
Okay.
And so it's savingforcollege.com, and it's a free website. They have, you know, I think you can, you know, do more and pay more and all the rest, but there's a lot of information there for free, and I would just poke around. They've got calculators. There's a community. There's it talks about financial aid and scholarships, the Coverdell ESA, all that kind of stuff.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
Chad, you're welcome. You take care of those boys, okay?
I sure will.
All right. Have a great Sunday. It's 42 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I want to move back this is something else that kind of came up. I guess I'll talk about this now. There's a brand new website out there called lifematersmedia.org, lifematersmedia.org. And it's a website around the idea of making decisions at the end of life and how you go about doing that. And a friend of mine who's a health journalist, and you know that I started this website a couple of years ago called that was about the Medicare industry, right? So MedicareNewsGroup.com, and then there was a sort of a companion site called Medicare News Digest. Anyway, so I met a whole bunch of really interesting health journalists in the process of building that site and then selling it. But there's a new site out called Life Matters Media that's about sharing information and resources on kind of end of life and people who are you know, unfortunately, we get to this place where either because we're ill or something happens, we're in a place where this is the end. And so what is so interesting about this website is that my mother's oncologist is – my mother's doing okay. Let's be clear. But my mother's oncologist is one of the founders of this website. And she is out of Northwestern Hospital in Chicago. She's absolutely a wonderful person. Her name is Mary Mulcahy. And so this website really has a lot of interesting resources. And it's paired with, and I love this kind of health journalism and just regular journalists paired with the health industry. And so I know a lot of the journalists who are involved and on the board of this website as well, who are getting involved in helping clear communication and helping make this platform very, very meaningful. And so I want to share that with you today. It's completely free. It's called Life Matters Media, and I will tweet it out. But it includes stories of families that are kind of going through this end of life and those who are caring for people. And I went through this with a dear friend of mine 3 years ago, and it's a very, very traumatic time. And so, again, lifematersmedia.org. It just helps you get together. Anyway, my friend Bruce Jabson, who worked with me on my Medicare site, has been working on this site as well. And he wrote a story for the platform today. It's brand new. So lifematersmedia.org. Okay, 404-872-0750. I want to move back into mortgages for a moment. And then we're going to take more of your calls. And there are a few lines open, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. So the question that I keep getting asked over and over again is, how high are rates going to jump? How high? How fast? And what's really interesting about this, and I had a conversation with an economist this week from the California Association of Realtors when I was at my Arizona conference, and you know, there's this feeling that when interest rates start to rise, right, they start to rise, that they're going to keep going in that direction. And I think that that's true in sort of a general sense. I do believe that interest rates are going to go up. Why not? We're near the historic low. We're within a point of the historic, one percentage point of the historic low of all time. But 4.25% is still an incredible interest rate. This is the interest rate that rates were at back in the 1950s after World War II. We have moved all the way back here. And I joke on the air all the time that my first loan in the 1980s was at 11.75%. But then I met somebody whose first loan, their mortgage, was at 16%. Like back in 1985. So mortgage interest rates have really done a whole arc. And they've come back down. And as I am constantly reminded, the only reason that mortgage interest rates have been this low is that the economy has not really recovered. The economy has been inching along and inching along and inching along. But we've had two really serious recessions, one in 2000 and one that we're just getting through now that officially ended in 2009 that nobody even feels 4 years later like we're really fully out of yet, which, by the way, means we're almost time ready for another one. But, you know, the 2000 was like, remember, we used to talk about it being the jobless recovery. And here we are now. We never really recovered all of those jobs, and we're still millions of jobs behind where we were in 2007. And the only reason that the unemployment rate is going down is the labor participation rate is so low. That's at a historic low. And so mortgage interest rates have been low for so long simply because all is not right with our economy. And we have to figure out a way to make it right so we can rebuild this country into what it should be and what we all want it to be. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Kling. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB. It's 55 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Kling. This is the Elise Kling Show, rebuilding America one house at a time. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time at thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Follow me on Twitter, at glink, at glink. So I thought, you know, we've been kind of building to this the entire show, but I want to start talking again about my rules for rebuilding America, because it is clear to me that we need to focus on how to rebuild you, and through you, your neighborhood, your community, your livelihood, your job, your business, whatever the piece of the puzzle that's not working for you, we have to figure out a way to get that in gear. When you've had millions of people displaced by this incredible Great Recession, and I was just looking online at my inbox, and I should probably go through some of those letters with you today, and it looks like, you know, we'll have time to do that, and I will. It, you know, people are disconnected. There are dots that are not being tied together, and I think that it's leaving people in a hole. It's leaving them in a hole that they don't understand, because they're missing just sort of basic things. Like, I just got an email from somebody saying she's listening to the show, and she desperately wanted a loan modification or a HARP refinance and was denied, and her loan is active, and then she went into bankruptcy. So per the investor guidelines, she was denied a loan modification, but she's current. And so she was went to a credit counseling class and did a bankruptcy filing, and now she wants a fixed-rate loan without a down payment. I've never defaulted in my mortgage payment. Can you tell me if there's anything I can do to get into a fixed-rate mortgage? And she keeps getting denied. Well, if you're in bankruptcy, it's going to be like 7 years before you can get a loan. She thinks that because she's never missed a mortgage payment, that she should be able to get a loan modification, but there is a big disconnect for her. There's a disconnect between understanding what's on her credit history. She took a credit counseling class and then went into bankruptcy, and she still doesn't understand that she has just destroyed her credit and her ability to refinance over the next 7 years. And now she wants a fixed-rate mortgage without a down payment. When she does qualify, when she is able to refinance, what she's going to find is they're going to want 30% equity in the property. And if she was turned down for any sort of loan modification, right, she probably is because she was underwater. Anyway, there is this huge disconnect. So when we come back, I'm going to go through my rules for rebuilding America, and we're going to talk about loan modification and what you can do and what you can't do. I will take some calls, 404-872-0750. There are some lines open still, 1-800-WSB-TALK. My goal is to help you understand this credit connection. That's why we have the Equifax Finance blog, right? It was designed to help you understand and make the connections between credit and all the other parts of your financial life. So we're going to do that next when we come back. And we've got a prize pack to give away. We'll do some other cool stuff and take your calls. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glenk. Stay tuned. Be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glenk is on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glenk Show, live on Sundays, 11 to 1. Here on News Talk WSB, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, the website, Think. Glenk.com. If you are interested in learning how to invest in real estate, click on the red house. Take advantage of my How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate series of webinars, all at thinklink.com. The intentional investor, I want you to think about what you're doing and invest in a way that makes sense, is smart. You should also, while you're there, sign up for my free weekly newsletter. That gives you kind of the overview of content in the ThinkLink community, all the different places that we write stuff, stories for, like CBS News and Yahoo, the Equifax Finance blog, ThinkLink.com, all kinds of other places, all free. It gives you just a really interesting look at personal finance and real estate information that you can use every single day of your life. That's the whole goal, folks. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750, 9 minutes past the hour. We're going to get to my rules for rebuilding in America in just a moment. David joins us on the line, though, from Macon. Hey, David.
Hi, Elise. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing just great.
What's going on?
I'm giving you a call because your story that you're leading into with the woman who was in bankruptcy and trying to refinance her loan to get a fixed mortgage. I actually practiced bankruptcy law, and one of the things that, while you're right that she can't modify a loan outside of bankruptcy because no one will lend to her, one of the principles of a Chapter 13 plan is that the plan has to be a rigid budget of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
So that everybody knows exactly how much the debtor is going to pay back over the course of the plan. And if she has an adjustable rate mortgage, then there is that rate will oftentimes be set at a fixed rate in the bankruptcy plan itself, so that everybody knows that how much the debtor is going to pay, and they don't have to worry about the escalation of the mortgage through the course of the plan and resulting in less money being paid out to unsecured non-priority creditors like credit card debt or medical bills.
It seems that's a really interesting point. So it seems likely that she's actually in a 13 rather than a liquidation just from her letter. Of course, everybody doesn't tell me enough information as they write these emails to me. I wish they told me more, but your point is a really good one.
That's a real common thing for folks to not do, which is really telling what bankruptcy plan folks are in would be very helpful for you, I would imagine. Because if somebody filed for Chapter 7, several years ago, there's nothing they can do about changing the rate of a reaffirmed debt outside of the plan. It would be a reaffirmed mortgage, or reaffirmed at a adjustable rate mortgage rate, whatever that was. And conversely, if she was in Chapter 13, one of the most critical things for her confirmation plan would be a clear and cognizable interest rate for her mortgage if she intended to retain the property.
So really the problem for her is that she doesn't understand the connection between sort of the place that she's put herself in and bankruptcy. She went into bankruptcy, I suppose, because she couldn't afford her mortgage anymore, right? Or some of her other... And again, I'm hampered by my lack... She didn't call in. She sent me an email with two paragraphs, and they're short paragraphs. Sometimes I get long stories. They're more helpful, right?
But they are. And it really looking at the whole perspective, or sort of the whole financial outlook of a debtor, is important to be able to figure out which direction to take. While bankruptcy really is something that investment-wise and financially is something that people are very afraid of, there's some folks where it makes strategic good business sense to analyze how you need to go forward with your debt. An upside-down mortgage was a very common reason in 2009 and 2010 to file for bankruptcy,
right,
just to get people so that they can avoid losing their home. At the same time, if you're filing, and to be clear, with the Bankruptcy Abuse and Consumer Protection Act that passed in 2005, most folks don't qualify to file a Chapter 7. So most folks are in a Chapter 13 at some stage. So that being said, it's really a lot better to understand what's going on inside of your bankruptcy plan, because she very well may have a fixed rate and not even know it. She could just be paying through her bankruptcy plan. If she's still under bankruptcy and her case wasn't dismissed for failure to make a payment or something, then she probably is paying a fixed rate and just has no idea.
Which just drives me absolutely up the wall.
Yeah. So just to be clear, and I don't like to just encourage people to abuse the bankruptcy system, but if somebody, you know, is upside down in their mortgage, or was, and Chapter 13 made sense for them, more likely than not, their mortgage was renegotiated under the bankruptcy code and through their bankruptcy plan, so that their mortgage makes sense for them to be able to pay off the debt that they owe and still be able to retain the property.
So my friend Joyce, who I sit on an advisory board with, was a bankruptcy judge in the system for a long time. And she said that, and perhaps you've seen this, through the last 7 or 8 years, she's just retired, but through the last 7 or 8 or 9 years, as we've gone through this horrific time, she just was appalled by what was coming into bankruptcy court, appalled by the lenders, and appalled by how little information people seem to have. Have you been practicing bankruptcy law for a long time?
I have been in the bankruptcy field for about 3 years, and I will tell you that there was a lot of very abusive lending that went on a good portion of the early part of the 2000s, but you see, in the course of the bankruptcy proceeding, especially local banks, especially, will have some of the most reasonable attorneys in the bankruptcy court, and they also have some of the most reasonable lending terms that I've ever seen. Most of the major problems come from the giant monster mega banks, the quote Clark Howard, but beyond that, they also have much more aggressive attorneys that are very unwilling to negotiate out the course of the debt throughout the remainder of the debtor's life. And something to keep in mind, most bankruptcy plans are only 5 years long, and with something like a mortgage, because you can't pay that off in 5 years, is a debt that is a long-term debt that will just be sustained through the course of the plan and then beyond. It's called a reaffirmation of debt.
Right.
And you want to make sure that your reaffirmation of debt is something that is a reasonable reaffirmation, so that you don't run into the same problem 2 or 3 or 5 or 6 years down the road.
Right, so
you'd be paying that loan back for another 30 years.
Right, you have to have some sort of a vision for it. The problem clearly with this woman is that she doesn't understand. She doesn't have a know what she's paying. She doesn't know what she's agreeing to in bankruptcy. She doesn't understand how it affects her. She says she's never defaulted, she's not delinquent, but just simply the act of being in bankruptcy has put her in a place at a great disadvantage, I think, because she may have thought this was a last resort, but usually, you know, when people are current with their mortgage, unless there's some other massive looming debt somewhere, I can't even imagine that bankruptcy would have been the right choice for her. There were other possible solutions or other possible places to go, including this show. I mean, she came to me, but she came to me 20 hours ago as opposed to, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. And, you know, we've helped just dozens and dozens of people try and cut red tape and get through their lenders and do all the rest of this in a way that just sort of makes a little bit more sense. And there are other places to go, too, like helpwithmybank.gov for those monster mega banks where it's true. I mean, there's just bad customer service permeates and people get lost. And I think they sometimes seem to forget that these are real people at the end of their payments. You know, at the other end of writing those checks, there's real people, not just, you know, it's not just a line item in some sort of master spreadsheet. But anyway, David, I really appreciate you calling in. Thank you so much for your insight.
Thank you.
Have a good Sunday. 17 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. So good to get somebody who's actually in bankruptcy court every day talking about some of the incredible difficulties people face and the 7-year effect that a filing for bankruptcy actually has. And maybe that isn't the place that you have to go. I've always said filing for bankruptcy should be the place that you go, the last resort, the last door that you open, and you really have to explore every other thing you do before you can actually get there. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I think we have a prize pack. I'm going to go check on that. If we do, we'll give it back and then take more of your questions next on News Talk WSB. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Time for our weekend prize pack, the McDonald's weekend prize pack. Today, value is $125. It's a really good one, though. It includes a pair of tickets to see Cirque Musica with the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra June 30th at Verizon Wireless Amphitheater, produced by ASO Presents, a McDonald's $25 gift card, and a pair of tickets to the All-American Celebration Concert with the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra July 5th at Verizon Wireless Amphitheater, produced by ASO Presents. Again, the value is $125, and we'll give it away to the fifth caller. To the prize pack line, 404-741-0750, 404-741-0750. Good luck. It's 26 minutes past the hour. I'm going to start a call. We'll see if we have time to take it. Larry joins us on the line from Chattanooga. Hi, Larry.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. What can I do for you today? We just have a minute or so before the break, but let's see if we can get started.
Just get me out of debt. That's all I ask.
All right, go for it.
I've got $11,000 credit card debt from 12% to one's going to turn over to 24%.
Okay.
I don't owe anything else but that. I do have a 401, but it's only got about $18,000 in it. Should I take that money out and pay off this debt and get it off my shoulder and go on with life, or what do I do?
Well, what's the debt from? What did you run it up from?
Well, the last two things we put on it were appliances. We'll put it that way.
All right, appliances died.
Yeah. Two. Dishwasher and water heater.
It's basically your emergency fund. You don't have any cash, and there's the 401k.
Yeah.
You know, the concern that I have with you raiding your 401k to pay this off is the whole thing will come out, and basically you'll pay it off, and then you'll be left without your 401k. But at least you're not paying 24% interest on that. So that may be the best thing to do. But if you do that, then the next thing that has to happen is you've got to set up a plan for yourself where you are putting away money into an emergency fund, because this is the end of your emergency fund, and you can't just be tapping into your credit cards every time you need something. So I want you to come up with a plan so you don't fall into this position again, or you're going to be working until you die. There will not be a retirement for you, Larry, and I don't want to see that happen. All right? 28 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glank. Stay tuned. I'll be right back with more Rebuilding America, one house at a time, on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glank is live and here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Elise Glank Show, where we are rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, tweeting about that woman with bankruptcy issue, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. You can also sign up for my free weekly newsletter at thinkglink.com. All kinds of great information for you, day in and day out, at the Equifax Finance blog, over at CBS News, Yahoo, all kinds of great places. So join us in the Think Glink community, at Glink or thinkglink.com. 404-872-0750. Let's go to the phones. Joyce joins us on the line. Hi, Joyce.
Hi.
So tell me what's going on in your world.
Well, it's complicated. I'd like to try and keep it short and simple, but...
Life is always messy.
So I have a home in a small town, and my mortgage is current, but it's probably at the almost at the break-even point for selling, like, you know, with the market and everything. I think I would barely close or sell without having to bring money to the close.
So you're about at break-even?
That's about where I'm at right now.
Okay.
I'm at the loan value. The payoff is about what the house is actually worth.
Okay.
You know, like market-wise, I guess.
Got it. And?
The thing I'm concerned about is an adjustable rate mortgage, and I would like to try to stop that from being adjustable. I'd like to, you know,
Are you gonna sell the house?
Well, and that's where it's kind of complicated. My husband has been gone for 2 years. He left. And we've been separated this whole time, and he has maintained the taxes and insurance, and I've made the mortgage payment. And I'm concerned, and he's kind of gradually stopped paying other debt of ours, or, you know, not debt necessarily, but, for example, my health insurance. I was recently dropped from his health insurance, and now that's a concern that I'm going to have to take care of myself.
Are you divorced?
No.
So how can he just drop you from his health insurance?
I wonder that as well. I'm not sure. It's new. It just happened just this last week, and so it's kind of fresh in my mind, and I'm a little bit confused about, I mean, I could probably handle taking care of myself in that respect, but then the mortgage, I'm just barely making ends meet now because of, I had a part-time job when he left, and I've added some additional hours, but I can make ends meet, but now if I have that too, you know, I'm afraid that the interest rates start going up, and I have my health insurance to deal with, and, you know, I'm concerned that I won't be able to afford the mortgage anymore, and then I'll get. I would really like to just sell the home and maybe start over.
Okay.
I just need some good advice.
So, You sound stuck to me. You sound stuck, and you're proving my rule about what happens when you're stuck and you don't start to move, which is that you just get in deeper. So you've got. And let's deal with the biggest elephant in the room, which is the fact that you're separated from your husband, but he clearly is moving on, and
right.
You haven't ended your marriage. Why?
Well, I thought it's expensive. For one, I haven't found any kind of aid. I haven't been able to save up a lot of money to pay legal fees. I'm trying to do that, but I've really not found someone that's affordable and... in my budget range.
How hard have you looked?
I've talked to about four different attorneys. One was, you know, in the like $1,200 to $1,500 range, and that was the best one I came up with. The others were anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000.
It is a lot of money, but you and your husband have to talk about this because he can't just arbitrarily cut you off piece from piece to piece, and you have certain rights.
I know, that was my biggest fear that would happen.
It's a huge, it's a huge fear. I can hear it in your voice, and it's not right.
I've asked him why he's prolonging, and I'm sure it's just a financial matter that's better for him to do that. And, you know, and when his response is that, you know, if I have a timeline that's different, then I should, you know, pursue that is what, you know, I guess he's basically saying he's not going to. I'm going to have to do that. And would a judge be able to give me the home? I wouldn't qualify for the home, I don't think.
But why do you, okay, so let's just set aside the whole house thing. You don't need this house.
No.
So I don't care. Do you care what happens to the house?
No, I don't, and I don't think he does. He built the house, but I really don't think he's like you said, moved on.
He's moved on, and so I think what you have to do is you have to refocus his attention back on the matter at hand, which is officially ending your marriage. You have the ability to get half of his 401k, potentially, half of his retirement, half of his pension. You also have the ability to destroy his credit by just not making payments on this loan. So he should be a little bit more concerned about what you're doing, and he's not. And
he doesn't think I will do anything. I'm, like, practical. I'm trying to be so practical that I just, I think he knows that I'm about me, that I would not, you know. I think he knows that I'm in a bad position, and
he's taking advantage of you, Joyce.
Yes.
Why are you letting him take advantage of you?
I don't really know what else. I don't know which direction to go. I get overwhelmed. Like, I make some choices. I think about things, and then I run into a dead end, and I just kind of get back on life and try to avoid it all. But now it's coming to a head with the whole health insurance situation. And
I mean, he's putting your life at risk. That's not right.
I have no coverage. Even as of today, I have no coverage. It's kind of scary.
Well, you can sue him for that coverage if you needed to. I think you have.
Maybe that's the advice I need. Is where would I start to define a legal aid in my area that would work with me? I have some cash, you know, and I would definitely continue to pay.
Well, let's take it one step further, Joyce, and let's say, what else can he rob you of to further lower your self-esteem to the point where you actually are going to go, I don't deserve to be treated like this? What else is he going to do to you? Because he's already left you, dictated the timetable for whatever's happening in your relationship, cutting you off slowly from things like health insurance and God knows what else. I just don't understand. You have to say to yourself, I've had it. I'm ready to move.
I have, but I try not to get angry, but I have, and I'm ready.
It's okay to get angry about this. It's okay to get angry about this.
Well, you know, and my thing is that there are two sides to every story, and we're both have our faults. But at my perspective is that now that we've come to the conclusion that it's best for both of us to go our separate ways, we still need to finalize and get some closure. And I've never been able to, you know, force his hand. I mean, that's how he's not going to do it.
How long were you married?
Ready.
How long were you married?
22 years.
22 years?
Yes.
22 years, and he's now left you without health insurance and in a house?
He said I could use his HSA, you know, if I need to for an emergency. But it's just an awkward, you know, that's so awkward. I don't know how much is on the card. I don't know, you know, I mean, I'm a healthy person, and I know that that's, you know, not too big a concern, but anyone could be in an accident, you know.
I'm dumbfounded. I'm dumbfounded. You have to. There are legal aid societies. There are attorneys who will help you. There are places that you can go for guidance. Do you have children?
We have, one has graduated college already, and then the other one's about to be in the 10th grade, and she lives with me. That's been the difficult part of.
Has he left your child without health insurance as well?
No, he's covering her.
You, Joyce, you need so much more help than I can give you, but I'm going to give you this one piece of advice.
Okay.
You have to move to protect yourself and protect your child. And death by a thousand cuts is what's happening to you right now, and you don't even realize it. So you got to look in the mirror and say every day, my child sees me behave in a way that is not strong and that is not protective, is an imprint on his or her life that is going
You're
to change
right.
how that child behaves in the future. Your actions or inactions are directly affecting the lives of the future. And you must take a step. I have never been more sure about anything in my life than you are leaving an imprint that you will regret for the rest of your life on this child who's at home and the child who's graduated from college.
You're right.
You need...
I feel that. I feel the pain of that.
It's
and
huge.
I get inactive. I get paralyzed with fear and I don't take action. And then, yeah, I want to be stronger for both of them and earn some respect and...
You are worthwhile as a human being. You have let this man drive you to a place of inaction, and it infuriates me. And you have to dig deep and find people who will support your fury, because it sounds like that's the only way you're going to get unstuck. And it sounds like you've been stuck a lot longer than the last 2 years since he left.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. So
what are you going to do to get unstuck? Do you have family? Do you have friends? Do you have, you can call Legal Aid of Atlanta. That's, you know, that's the easy thing to do.
I will try that again. When I called one Legal Aid, I guess they gave me a number in my area, which was Gainesville, and they said they only offered aid if it were abuse involved, that sort of thing. So I never found anyone that suggested a sliding scale or pay overtime or...
Well, go find more. Go call the Atlanta Bar Association and ask for the head of the divorce committee.
Okay.
And tell that person that you need some referrals to people who will work with you. You may be entitled to support. You were married for 22 years. You're definitely entitled to half of his pension and half of his 401k. You're entitled to other benefits here. You are entitled to cash that was built up and not just the house. Like, he thinks he can shove this worthless house on you and that's what you're going to take for your share? He thinks that because you've let him think that.
Yeah.
That's not right.
I tried to talk to him, but he doesn't need it.
Listen, the time for talking is over. You're going to have to take action to protect your family and to protect yourself. Enough. Nobody's going to give you anything, Joyce. You have to take it. You have to stand up and ask to be counted. It's
right.
Time for you to do that. So tomorrow, call the Atlanta Bar Association. Ask for the head of the divorce committee.
Okay.
And start taking some steps to protect yourself and protect your family. And call
okay.
me back next week and let me know what they say and who you have talked to, because you're going to need to interview several attorneys. There is money here for you. You say you're barely making ends meet. He's cut you off from health insurance. You are entitled to half of what was brought forth in this marriage.
Yeah.
And you can do this.
Well, thank you so much. I am. I'm going to do what you said. I'm going to start tomorrow, and I will fight my way through until I get someone that can give me some advice to get me started.
You've got to fight. You've got to fight. And you can call me, you can't really call me because I'm traveling nonstop, but you can email me at questions@thinklink.com, and I will answer your questions. Just remind me that you are the person that I talked to today on the show. And I will help guide you week in and week out if you need it. But you can do this, Joyce. If for nothing else, that you don't leave an imprint on the future of your children, that you didn't take steps in the right direction. 404-872-0750, 49 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. I'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB. 55 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. See if we can fit in another call. Elaine joins us on the line. Hey, Elaine, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you, Elise?
I'm fine, thank you. What can I do for you today?
This is a much simpler scenario, and my heart goes out to Joyce.
Doesn't it? I've been thinking about her for the last few minutes as we've been on a commercial thinking, I really want to help this woman. I hope she contacts me again.
Yes. I bought my house about 7 years ago, and for 211, I live in Roswell. I refied on a HARP loan at about 3 years ago at 5 3/8. And I'm just wondering, are there any programs out there? Right now, I guess I got my property assessment, and it was like a 151, but Zillow says it's 171, and I owe about 160.
So Zillow is an estimate, and it's probably not right.
Yeah, but, you know, the house is in my neighborhood. Like, one sold for $194 just the other day.
So,
so I know it's not $150. It may not be quite $170 yet, but I'm right around that point of, is it worth, and are there other programs since I already got one HARP loan?
One HARP loan, and you can't really get another one. So, I mean, you can go shop around and see. If it's $191 and you owe $160, you're in great shape, right? You can just go get a regular refinance.
Yeah.
So it's certainly worth checking that out if the house is similar.
But it's definitely not 191. It might be somewhere between 160 and 170, and it's almost to break even. So I probably couldn't even get.
So then you really can't, because then what you wind up doing is you end up with like an FHA where you would still need 3.5% to 5% in cash. And then you're paying a higher interest rate anyway. It's lower than what you're paying now, higher interest rate, but then you end up paying mortgage insurance. And that's really expensive. So you probably wouldn't end up saving any money. And so it seems like, wow, you really wish you could get 4.5% or 4.25%, but I'm not sure you're going to be able to do that.
Right. Okay, well, that was just kind of what I figured, and I just wanted to check in with you.
Well, listen, so, it's always worth going around to a lender and saying, hey, this is my credit history and credit score.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming my house is worth X, what does that get me? Is there anything that you can do for me? And they may say yes, they may say no, but it's worth checking out. And certainly 5 3/8, while it's not 4 or 4.25%, it's still a great historical interest rate. Is it affordable for you?
Yes, it is. I have a roommate. I was going to say, hey, Joyce, have you thought about getting another woman in there? because I was in a situation where my child support was dwindling. So, you know, it is affordable. So I'm not in a bad situation, but I just got this call the other day from somebody saying, hey, you know, we've got these new loans that you're eligible for. And I thought, you know, I'm not so sure. I would rather call somebody else about it than have somebody call me.
Well, sometimes it's okay to have people call you, but I like you reaching out and double checking to make sure and see if you do qualify for something new that's out there, something that's being tested that I don't even know about yet. I know it seems unlikely, but it is possible. I don't know about it yet. Let me know what you decide to do, Elaine. And now you're hearing the music, which means that our 2 hours are up. I'll be back next Sunday. I hope you will as well. 11 o'clock here on News Talk WSB. And in the meantime, check out the website. Hit the red house if you're interested in investing in real estate. And follow me on Twitter @Glink. Have a great week, everybody.